music. In fact, there were none of these things, and so the silence remained. Inside the Waystone, a pair of men huddled at one corner of the bar. They drank with quiet determination, avoiding serious discussions of troubling news. In doing this, they added a small, sullen silence to the larger, hollow one. It made an alloy of sorts, a counterpoint. The third silence was not an easy thing to notice. If you listened for an hour, you might begin to feel it in the wooden floor underfoot and in the rough, splintering barrels behind the bar. It was in the weight of the black stone hearth that held the heat of a long-dead fire. It was in the slow back and forth of a white linen cloth rubbing along the grain of the bar. And it was in the hands of the man who stood there, polishing a stretch of mahogany that already gleamed in the lamplight. The man had true red hair, red as flame. His eyes were dark and distant, and he moved with the subtle certainty that comes from knowing many things. The Waystone was his, just as the third silence was his. This was appropriate, as it was the greatest silence of the three, wrapping the others inside itself. It was deep and wide as autumn's ending. It was heavy as a great river smooth stone. It was the patient, cut flower sound of a man who is waiting to die. Chapter 1. A Place for Demons. It was felling night, and the usual crowd had gathered at the Waystone Inn. Five wasn't much of a crowd, but five was as many as the Waystone ever saw these days, times being what they were. Old Cobb was filling his role as storyteller and advice dispensary. The men at the bar sipped their drinks and listened. In the back room, a young innkeeper stood out of sight behind the door, smiling as he listened to the details of a familiar story.
When he awoke, Tobolin the Great found himself locked in a high tower. They had taken his sword and stripped him of his tools. Key, coin, and candle were all gone. But that weren't even the worst of it. You see,
Cobb paused for effect,
'cause the lamps on the wall were burning blue.
Graham, Jake, and Shep nodded to themselves. The three friends had grown up together, listening to Cobb's stories and ignoring his advice. Cobb peered closely at the newer, more attentive member of his small audience, the Smith's apprentice.
Do you know what that meant, boy?
Everyone called the Smith's apprentice boy, despite the fact that he was a hand taller than anyone there. Small towns being what they are, he would most likely remain boy until his beard filled out or he bloodied someone's nose over the matter. The boy gave a slow nod.
The Chandrian.
That's right, Cobb said approvingly. The Chandrian. Everyone knows that blue fire is one of their signs. Now he was...
But how'd they find him?
The boy interrupted.
And why didn't they kill him when they had the chance? Hush now. You'll get all the answers before the end, Jake said. Just let him tell it.
No need for all that, Jake, Graham said. Boy's just curious. Drink your drink.
I drank me drink already, Jake grumbled. I need another, but the innkeep's still skinning rats in the back room.
He raised his voice and knocked his empty mug hollowly on the top of the mahogany bar.
Oi! We're thirsty men in here!
The innkeeper appeared with five bowls of stew and two warm, round loaves of bread. He pulled more beer for Jake, Shep, and old Cobb, moving with an air of bustling efficiency. The story was set aside while the men tended to their dinners. Old Cobb tucked away his bowl of stew with the predatory efficiency of a lifetime bachelor. The others were still blowing steam off their bowls when he finished the last of his loaf and returned to his story.
Now, Tobolin needed to escape, but when he